Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a meal dish out there.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review as the other Cultaholic lads get ready for, you guessed it, another pay-per-view weekend. Oh, there's a lot of them at the moment, isn't there? It's just like there's too much wrestling. We are here via our IkaPro Power DeLorean. No sign of a takeover. No Kyle O'Reilly. It's more a case of Bubba O'Blimey. As we enter the new generation 1995 of professional wrestling. Who be we? I'm Fake Geordie, radio presenter without ball phone, Tom Campbell. I'm alongside Titan Shrugged, the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen, the cultaholic, the man who, for the last 91 weeks plus, has been to my side via the proverbial tin can string, you could say. I'd say he's the Ricky Morton to my Robert Gibson of the year. I'd say it's probably a little bit more appropriate to say that he's one of the... I've forgotten the team, the Heavenly Bodies! Oh, I was doing really well! And I forgot what the Heavenly Bodies were called. Anyway, flip it out. Justin Henry off of America.
I am Tom Pritchard, right?
You are Dr. Tom. I am Gigolo Jimmy.
Okay, good. Because you're better at gyrating than
I am. I've got the hips for Gigolo Jimmy.
Is this true? I will not question that.
How is the world of Justin Henry?
The world of Justin Henry is doing quite well at the moment. Not really a whole lot going on in terms of excitement necessarily, but all is even with the world very even keeled.
I realize how overall horrible because of my reaction to something you said earlier. Very, very innocently when we were chatting, we were rearranging some dates for future podcasts. And you said, Sundays going forward are an absolute no-go. And I'm so instinctly wired from 2020 to assume something bad has happened. I was like, oh, God, what's happened? Is everything okay? And you went, no, the football's back on. Oh, right, okay, well, that's fine. I thought it was like, oh, no, family members got COVID. I have to look after them intently now. Or
yes, only on Sundays.
Yeah, but only on Sundays. I don't like them that much. Let's go back to simpler times. Let's go back to 1995, where there are people in the crowd, and there was a wrestling show that we were questioning. I mean, not a whole lot has changed. It's just less people in the crowd.
Yes.
We're back in 1995. Where and when are we this week, Justin Henry?
Well, this is the go-home show for the 1995 Royal Rumble, the fastest-paced Royal Rumble of all time, it turns out. This episode aired on Monday, January 16th, 1995. It was taped 1 week earlier from the Summit in Houston, Texas, which we have noted before is a beautiful, beautiful venue, especially compared to what preceded this.
Oh, they've been in some absolute wrecks of buildings in the run up to this, and it just it's sending the wrong impression because, like, 1995, we were braced for damage. And the first 2 weeks, like, the presentation has been better than it's ever been.
Well, you notice how some people who live in, like, crappy homes, they at least decorate their front door and their front porch?
Yeah.
But, like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then you walk in and you realize, oh, yeah, this place is condemned.
So you're expecting at any point the entranceway to fall down, and we just see Vince McMahon shivering on a table with a tin of soup, going, please don't tell people how I live.
Yeah, this is really the facade.
Well, funny you mentioned the Rumble. The first thing I've got here from the Wrestling Observer, which is what we do every week, as well as talking about the episode of Monday Night Raw from this week. We'll also compare notes made by Dave Meltzer and company in the Wrestling Observer. And Dave says, lots of news regarding the upcoming pay-per-view schedule. WWF holds the annual Royal Rumble on the 22nd of January in Tampa, with the match being cut from its traditional 1 hour down to 30. It's also interesting in the promotion of this event, even more than any other, Titan is trying to sell the show based more on the appearance of Pamela Anderson than any wrestlers or even the wrestling itself. It appears there have been tons of television commercials, far more than any pay-per-view in memory, and all have focused on Pamela Anderson. First of all, the chopping of the Rumble, which I know we'll talk about a lot more when we watch the Rumble itself. But what do you think's the mindset for switching it out, for dropping 50% of the match?
A complete lack of star power. You want to just shuffle these guys in and out as fast as you possibly can.
Do you think they're very aware that the quality is low, so it's just, let's get this done?
Yeah. You just don't have the guys that can last, fill in the 2-minute segments unless you're just relying on Sean to throw a guy out, wait. Because, how many guys in this match are actually, could you see in a world title match? Sean, Davey Boy, Luger, Owen, maybe Backlund, maybe Bundy. That's pretty much it.
And there's just not enough in terms of the attrition to put on an hour's worth of wrestling at this point.
No, there isn't. Sean could carry the match as best he could, make it interesting just by being in there for the full hour. Minor spoiler for how it's going to go in a sense. But it's just, the roster's so depleted.
And the focus on Pamela Anderson, I think, probably lends into your answer for the first question as well. That distinct lack of major players in the company would lead to there being less of a push for the stars and more of, hey, here's that one from Baywatch. Let everybody look at her.
Plus, it is for those younger fans out there, Pamela Anderson was a major deal 25 years ago. It can't be overstated just how culturally relevant she was. Baywatch is the most popular television program on planet Earth. It was syndicated in so many countries who just wanted to watch, in fairness, women run up and down the beach.
I'm trying to think who modern day this would be in comparison to. Somebody of not the star quality, but sort of the reach of a Pamela Anderson. And I'm thinking somebody maybe Cardi B.
I might have said Kate Upton a few years ago.
Okay, that's a good shout, actually. That's a very good shout.
But even then, she wasn't like Pam phenomena. She wasn't quite like that.
That's the thing now, isn't it? That the old phrase was, everybody will be famous for 15 minutes. But nowadays, everybody is famous to 15 people. So you don't have those. I could list off four or five people on TikTok who have over a million followers, and most people I speak to will never have heard of them.
Yeah, there's just so many avenues to reach somebody now that it's because you have more options. The audience is spread a little bit more thin, I think.
Would it be equivalent of a Beyonce being at the Royal Rumble?
That might be a little bit closer, depending on just. It is different audiences and different levels of talent, obviously. But yeah, I could almost go with that just based on how popular they are. If we're talking just quantity of people, all the people watching Beyonce are at least partially into the artistry. Pam, with all due respect, she does a lot of charity work. Not so much an artist.
Okay.
She was popular enough to get a very bad action movie in 96 called Barbed Wire, which
I remember Barbed Wire, or Boob Wire as we called it in our house, because we are banter merchants, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's it was basically just sold because, hey, Pamela Anderson's in it, go watch it.
Go watch Pam. Mm-hmm.
It was by no means a Soderbergh film.
In the preparation for the Royal Rumble, Shawn Michaels is back. He was back in the ring just 3 days ago at South Padre Island in Texas at the Challenge tapings, mainly doing just some quick squash matches. So they're keen to get Michaels just clean and fresh and ready to go, because, whoa, we're going to be leaning on him this year.
His training should have just consisted on putting a drink tray in his hand and slowly stacking 29 glasses on top of it while he's holding it.
That'd have been a good promo, actually.
It'd have been accurate. It would have been close to reality.
Just a few other bits from the WWF, and then we'll go around the wrestling world. The house show tour coming up post Royal Rumble looks to be called In High Gear, headlined by Jeff Jarrett and Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon and Diesel.
Sounds like a fun match, but it's I'm sure it didn't draw all that well.
No, we'll see if that changes any shape. And obviously, Razor and Diesel are gonna. This is a big thing for them coming up at the other half of this decade. But we've still got them here for now, so let's just enjoy them while we've got them. Chris Candido could be on his way into the WWF, according to Meltzer. This I never knew, and I love the idea of this. It appears Chris Candido will be doing a Mighty Mouse-type babyface short superhero gimmick, since Candido is deceptively strong in the weight room. I love that.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because the term Mighty Mouse has been used in wrestling before, and people think it has a negative connotation. Like it was used for Pac or Neville back when he was in WWE to say, I want to give him a Mighty Mouse gimmick. People think, oh, no, they're going to make up a superhero and put ears on him. That's not what it means. A Mighty Mouse gimmick is a small baby face who is deceptively strong. That's all it is. And he shows off just how strong he is by facing bigger opponents and throwing them around. That's all Mighty Mouse is. Like John Silver, the darling of BTE these days, he did a Mighty Mouse gimmick in CZW to a degree, because he would hip toss the heavyweights around and while screaming, like, yeah, just showing how powerful he was. He's like 5'6 and weighs maybe 175, 180. But he was kind of doing that to a degree. That's all it is. It's not a negative connotation at all. And Candido could absolutely have pulled that off, but they gave him something different.
I can also add, if we're doing a list of top Mighty Mouse gimmicks in wrestling, write that down, Justin, you never know. Tyler Bates springs to mind.
There you go. That's a great shout right there. He's sort of Mighty Mouse-ish, although they don't explicitly call it that on TV, because you wouldn't call it that on TV.
No. That's like a back office term, that is, really, more than anything else.
And he has a Mighty Mouse stash.
Oh, hey. 10 points. I kind of feel like from the parody side of it, that they went with something like that with Crash Holly. It's more of a parody version of a Mighty Mouse gimmick. Like, always there with chest puffed out, sizing up bigger wrestlers.
Oh, yeah. He didn't realize how small he was. Of course, he did carry the scale around it, because he would only fight super heavyweights, and then it always backfired.
Exactly. I feel like there was a parody version of that. Before we get into the show itself, just want to quickly see what WCW is up to. 2 days before this, they held a house show at the Abrams Fitness Center in Fort Hood, Texas. So everyone's playing cracking venues in 1995. Normally they're doing stuff at Orlando, which I prefer immensely. Like the Disney tapings, the soundstage,
right.
Look so good. I watched Flair versus Steamboat on that soundstage recently, and it was beautiful.
I'm sure it was.
But let's take a look at what they were doing at the Abrams Fitness Center in Fort Hood, Texas, on a couple of nights before this episode of Raw. So we had Alex Wright and Bobby Eaton in the opening match. They're still pushing Alex Wright there.
Sure.
This looks like it might have been the last night of Jean-Paul Levesque. He was in a losing effort to Johnny B. Badd over the World TV title.
Well, he'd get him back eventually.
Oh, and then some. I thought that's quite a nice little footnote, that match. When, like, in about a year's time, we will meet again.
Hunter never forgets.
We had Marcus Alexander Bagwell and the Patriot, a.k.a. Stars and Stripes, beating Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma. Pretty wonderful.
Which is a great tag team name for, like, a combo of gimmicks.
It is. I like a good crossover like that. Good fun. Jim Duggan beating Steven Regal. So Duggan's being very Duggan in WCW at this point.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing, darling, nothing. the Nasty Boys defended their world tag titles against Harlem Heat as a result of a DQ. They were challenging Harlem Heat, and they lost. Well, they won via DQ, so they didn't win the belts. Harlem Heat Nasty Boys had a deceptively fun story in the 90s.
Well, it's four hard-hitting heavyweights, and in fact, we just watched Fall Brawl 96 the other night as part of our watch-along series, and they faced off on that show as well, and it was a pretty enjoyable match. So, of course, it was Booker taking most of the... Well, I can't say he took most of the bumps, because Knobs and Sags were... For two guys who were 270, 280 pounds, they flew around a lot. Knobs and Sags were far from lazy. They took some great bumps in their career.
Oh, I think they get branded quite a bit as just sort of... As lazy Hogan friends. But there is a bit more to them than that.
Here's some homework for everyone listening out there. Go on the network, find Halloween Havoc 1990. Watch the Nasty Boys versus the Steiner Brothers and get back. Tell me what you think of that match.
Okay, there you go. Some homework for you there.
Mm.
Nice. And in the main event, Sting beat Avalanche by DQ.
Sounds like an okay house show, actually.
It's not too bad, is it? That's not too bad. Bringing us kicking and screaming back to 2020. I don't know whether you're a Smash Brothers fan, Justin.
You mean Evil Uno and Stu Grayson?
Sadly not. But nice callback. I mean, the video game Super Smash Brothers.
I was never really into Nintendo after a certain year, so I can't say I was.
Fair enough. They just announced Minecraft Steve for Smash Brothers. Which is the weirdest thing of 2020 so far, which is fun. That's not part of the podcast. I just spotted it and it made me smile. Okay, so with that in mind, that brings us crashing up to date with 1995. This is where we hand the baton of podcasting to Justin Henry, and he will walk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, featuring William Shatner again.
Which reminds me, Tom, you might as well hop into the DeLorean again, because we're going back to 1968 now.
We certainly flipping are, aren't we? Wow.
Yes, we're going back to a time when William Shatner was Mr. Star Trek on TV. He was Captain James Kirk. We have a sci-fi themed intro, which I think is actually more Star Wars than Star Trek, is it not?
I think it's a bit Star Wars, isn't it?
Yeah, with these scrolling text going through the night sky.
I think Vince just remembered it was a sci-fi film and just assumed it was that.
I doubt even Vince knew that. He just told him, like, it's sci-fi. Perfect. Here's a pal. So we're hyping up the fact that Shatner's going to be in Brett's corner tonight when he faces Jeff Jarrett. He's going to boldly go where no man has gone before, which is BS because Brett's had managers before, including Jimmy Hart. So this is, I don't know. I just wanted to squeeze in as much Shatnerism as possible, and already I'm getting nauseous.
We certainly have quite the showcase of William Shatner this week, which we'll talk about we go through it.
We certainly do. But first, speaking of 1960s technology, holy green screen.
Is it the greenest of green screens?
As we have Sean and Vince in front of a static crowd shot, basically getting ready to play one of those Whose Line Is It Anyway games where they have to act like they can't see what's behind them, but they have to, like, based on clues, figure out what it is.
It's excellent green screen acting. And there's an art to it. There's a true art to it.
Well, no, there isn't.
There is I'm giving no them too much credit, aren't I?
You most certainly are. This is cutting edge technology here.
It reminds me of, this whole bit reminds me of, you know, from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Mm-hmm.
They do the green screen round.
Yes.
Where you'll have, like, Ryan Stiles sort of from a green screen, and the two other contestants will be asking him questions based on where he is, and he'll be answering, trying to figure out where he is all along. I feel like it was a bit like that. Put me in mind of that. Maybe want to watch Whose Line Is It Anyway.
Wasn't that what I just said? I just described that game.
Oh, I thought you described me something different.
Well, this is how bad 95.
95 already jaded me. I saw Minecraft Steve and it took me away. It took me off my game.
That's how bad the show is. Time I stopped listening to each other at a certain point.
Oh. Hey, I'll tell you, all jokes aside, though, I'll tell you what it's like. You know whose line is it anyway?
I'm like, oh, what other game is Tom going to describe? Oh, wait.
Scenes from a hat. It's like scenes from a hat.
Continue. You had a point.
I still think there's an art to it. I stand by it. It's so reminds. Do you know what game it reminds me of, Justin? It reminds me of standing up, sitting down, and kneeling.
Well, yes, so we had two guys standing, so they both lost.
And then we all lost, right? Because it's 1995.
Who lost? America lost.
Where did America lose hardest? Last night. So the night before last in the debate or here?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this show had well, we'll see when we get to it. I don't want to spoil too much ahead of time, but so let's just crack on with this one here.
Let's move through, man.
The Heavenly Bodies get the currently in the ring treatment, which is never a good sign.
I mean, Sean, they had music, and they still had Cornette with them, so it's not all lost.
I suppose not. Sean, meanwhile, compares the upcoming Bret Jarrett match to the Cowboys 49ers NFC Championship game, which is very ambitious. very ambitious comparison there.
I was gonna ask you to explain this one to me.
I think he was just saying because it's like a big matchup, because that was like the two NFL powerhouses at the time. Facing off in an important playoff game, he's trying to jazz up Bret Jarrett by saying it's very similar. Well, okay, Bret's a top guy, but Jarrett's more like the who was mediocre in 94? I guess the Indianapolis Colts.
It's the fake it till you make it ethos, which I believe we're going to see a lot of in 1995, where you're just going to tell people these are the top stars until they start believing it.
Pretty much, yes. So we start off with the Heavenly Bodies versus the 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly, or the Cinderella Team, as Vince calls them, which is are you familiar with that term in sports there, Tom?
These are the guys. See, it's always been a weird phrase, the Cinderella Team. It's the idea that they through it all, through trials and tribulations, they're the ones that are making it to the end. They're going to the ball, as it were. Mm. And Holly, and it seems weird to associate Bob Holly and 1-2-3 Kid with Cinderella.
I can see Bob Holly smashing somebody in the face with a glass slipper.
Yeah. I can't see Bob Holly running away from a party, nor dressing up and riding in a pumpkin to a party.
Well, he can. What if it was like a NASCAR pumpkin?
If only we knew what that looked like. John. If only there was someone that could bring that to life for us! Ian!
John Aloysius Eiley.
Ian! I found someone cheaper than John. Ian!
Oh.
Ian's the Aldi John. Ian! What? Like, we're having to cut back in the office, so we've swapped John out for Ian. Ian!
Is his last name Pib?
His last name is Titan, which is what they call Mars bars in Aldi. Now we'll stretch for the original because it tastes better and it's less filling. John, NASCAR pumpkin, thank you.
With Bob driving, any era Bob could be blonde dye job mirror hair Bob.
All of them at the same time in the same pumpkin.
Yes, all the Bob Hollies.
All the Bob Hollies. And a dragon.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Somehow I knew that was coming. I've heard it in a while, but I knew it was coming.
It reminds me of that sketch from Whose Line Is It Anyway? The one
is it the sketch where the Heavenly Bodies attack the baby faces before the bell?
No, it's the one where the Heavenly Bodies attack the baby faces before the bell.
I see where this show's going.
Hey, I see where this show's going.
So we learned that over the weekend, Kid and Holly won the tournament final, and Tom is so lucky that Justin got him this job.
Very lucky. Always lucky.
Very good. Anyway, so it's Kid and Holly going to the finals to face the Tonga and Bigelow. So this is just kind of like a tune-up match against a team they've already beaten. Which, alright, whatever. So at one point, someone hits a super kick. I don't know who it was. I'm going to assume it was Kid.
Yeah, it was Kid.
And Sean says, a little chin music, as he works the name in.
Ah, I didn't spot that. That's cool.
Already he's trying to make that a thing. But in this case, Sean does make fetch happen.
He really does.
Sean at this point challenges his inner Jimmy the Greek and tells us to believe the point spread of the Super Bowl. He ended up being right. For those of you who weren't around in 95, Super Bowl 29 was coming up. The San Francisco 49ers versus the lowly San Diego Chargers, who were a Cinderella team in their own right. And it was it is to this day the largest point spread in Super Bowl history, as the 49ers were favored by 18.5 points.
Jeez.
They had no faith in the Chargers. None whatsoever. Just like this is like prime Taker versus someone challenging his streak at like WrestleMania 21 or 22. Like, you knew who was going to win. And sure enough, they won by 23 points. So, if you bet on the Chargers to cover that astronomical spread, you failed. Anyway, back to this match here. This Sunday on Action Zone before the Royal Rumble, we learned that Bob Holly will face Tatanka in a match that I found out was taped on December 13th.
What?
Yes.
Jeez, they're still plumbing stuff from 94. Jeez.
Dude, Superstars and Challenge Champions go so far ahead. Like I had the 95 results page up right now. The Superstars tapings that aired after this, or taped the day after this taping here, the last episode for that airs February 11th.
Jeez.
So, I can only imagine the stress you have to be under. Like, there's a storyboard, like, months ahead in this company at this point.
A lot of it is... I guess you would have known that was going to be the final. I guess if it was... If it's connected to the tag tournament, then at least you probably have an idea early on down the road who was winning it. So I imagine they must have earmarked Bob and 1-2-3 Kid for quite some time.
I'm sure they already knew who was going to win the tournament, how it was going to go and all that. They probably had that plan well in advance, but I'm just saying in terms of just knowing this is what we're doing 7 weeks from now. And this is what we're doing 8 weeks from now, and you have it all planned out. That's a lot of planning.
It's exhausting. I mean, it's no different to something like what Impact Wrestling does now, in the sense that, but the only difference being is that they're taping it like show after show after show after show, and they're not like jumping around the timeline. Oh, we'll do one match there, we'll do one match in 3 weeks' time, we'll do another match the week before. And all that stuff.
And not only that, but they're taping three shows. Raw, Superstars, and Challenge, which Challenge will exist until August. But it's weird because Superstars, when you're taping it, the first show you're taping is not going to air for at least 2 weeks. Challenge, same thing. So they're kind of synchronized. Raw, you have to make fit based on a live show and the following week's show. So you're taping stuff in a sense out of order in order to squeeze it all in together so that it fits.
Headache-inducing stuff.
I'm starting to see why there's so many drug problems in this company at one time.
How do you feel about Bob Holly and 1-2-3 Kid in the finals?
I mean, they're a fine team, two great wrestlers. It's they want to sell the Cinderella aspect of it, which is fine. It's probably going to guarantee it's a good match at the Rumble. It's them versus Bigelow versus Tatanka. As long as everyone's on their A game, that should be a really good match, you'd think, right?
Yeah, you'd hope so.
Speaking of Bigelow Tatanka, they come out of the entranceway to watch this match go down. They're scouting Kid and Holly. And out of nowhere, for no reason whatsoever, now keep in mind, it's just DiBiase, Bigelow, and Tatanka watching from the entranceway. That's all it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vince accuses DiBiase and Cornette of being in cahoots. It's like, what? They're watching a match.
It's there's nothing cahooty about it. They are, as you say, watching a match.
What kind of Joseph McCarthy bullshit is this? it's like whenever Bob. It was like the old primetime wrestling when Bobby Heenan couldn't do anything without Gorilla Monsoon like turning into like a heel act. Like Bobby Heenan says, "Oh, oh, I had turkey for dinner yesterday." Monsoon says, "You probably stole it from the supermarket, huh?" Like, they can't do anything that's like the least bit innocent or the face comedy you're trying to turn in somehow like an act of treachery. It's so weird, that mindset.
A strange way of twisting it.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, maybe the fans will respect these guys for having the diligence and discipline to scout their opponents. Oh, they're playing Kahoot somehow. Don't look at anything more than that. So we get a spot here. Sorry, but they got that, like, he even inhales and exhales evilly.
You can tell by his asthma that he is clearly a wrong'un.
Probably deals drugs.
You can tell by the way I draw my breath, I'm a baddie here. No time to talk.
So we get a really awesome spot here because this match gets really good at the end. The Heavenly Bodies are going for a double clothesline, I believe. So Bob Holly gets sent into the ropes. On the rebound, he jumps up and lands on their arms, like on their wrists and their hands. And in doing so, he draws them together so that they bonk their heads. That was awesome.
That's a great bit.
The Heavenly Bodies were the revival of their day.
They never get enough of the love, and it's a shame that they did some good stuff in WWF at this point. I feel like you could have really built them as this veteran tag team of the division.
Oh, yeah, they were definitely the missing link between like the Midnight Express and the revival in terms of that mindset.
I feel like you could have put the belts on them in this tournament and had them as just like this old grizzled tag team who's like, we'll take on everybody.
Well, I don't know if you've come across this in your observer readings of this period, but Del Rey's not really going to be long for this company. That's kind of obvious why.
Yeah, I have heard that.
So, yeah, that's not a good thing. And Sheamus screwed Pritchard over a bit, although he would get a belt later on, just not in an expected way. So anyway, Kid gets the hot tag. He goes wild. It's 1-2-3 Kid in 1995 offense, where it's kicks for everyone. Spin kicks, drop kicks, everything you can imagine under the sun. And then we go right to the finish in what is a criminally abbreviated match. As the Bodies try to double suplex Kid, Holly spears Pritchard while Kid is up in the air. So Kid drops down, gets Del Rey with a fisherman suplex, and wins.
Very much came out of nowhere. I feel like this match could have gone a little bit more. I like the whole story that they told, which was, you know, they're fighting from underneath. I like that, but they could have gone a bit further.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a few more minutes of the match, you know, get us to love Kid and Holly even more. But as a nice little sub 5-minute taste of what they could do, that was an excellent match.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm ready for Sunday. I like they've pitched up Bob and 1-2-3 Kid as a cracking team.
But the idea is they're small, whereas Bigelow and Tatanka are both bulky powerhouses, so they're definitely the underdogs in this match.
It was a great bit when, after the bell sounded, you had Bam Bam Bigelow just sort of give a big pshaw to the midair. Like, oh, we'll have them on Sunday. It was very submissive, like, body language from them.
I ain't going up for that move.
We'll get it done in 3.
So we go to the back. Very impact-ish. For this tape show to Bret Hart and William Shatner, as Vince's voice completely changes. Now he's apparently being routed to like a 56K modem all of a sudden. Shatner assures us that Bret has no ring rust. How would he know this?
They're very confident that Bret's going to be just fine, aren't they?
Oh, they're very confident. But, like, does Shatner even know who the hell Bret the Hitman Hart is? Like, before he got there that day? I realize they're both Canadian, they're both Canadian legends and all.
I don't think he was massively aware, and I genuinely think that Shatner thought he was the star. Just
and
by
Shatner
the way that,
right.
that he would be. I mean, yeah. Judging by the way, like, as you know, talk about their chemistry. Like, he kept cutting Brett off.
If only they brought in Piper to play Scotty.
That would have been fine.
Or a young Drew McIntyre.
Oh, a very young. You think you're in, what, 5?
10, maybe. Give a claim more to the Klingons.
Yeah, but Shatner just... Shatner was just...
Power.
John?
Drewy.
Baby Drewy. Claymore and a Klingon. Baby Drewy, Claymore and a Klingon. Thank you.
Yeah, shame it's not Star Wars, could have been Drew Baca.
Hey! Very hairy,
baby. He's got Drew Baca with a Scottish accent.
I got fired a while ago.
Kenny, what happened? Apologies to Kenny and Jen. Love you both.
Nah, Jen deserves it.
That's not true.
I'll fight her. Are we back to... I thought we never really went anywhere with me calling out Jen. I'll fight her.
That's because no one believes either of you two whoever have an ounce of conflict in you.
I feel like that Jen and I would have an excellent back and forth wrestling, cinematic wrestling match. I feel like that when we can unsocially distance, I feel like Jen and I should film a cinematic wrestling match. As I think it'd be the politest thing you've ever seen. We'd scuffle through the bar, and then one of us would hold the door open for the other, and we go, "You go first." "No, you go first. I insist." "No, I insist. You go first."
It'd be amazing. The dullest thing ever.
It would be dull and fantastic all at the same time.
I mean, I cherish the two of you, but goddamn, I would not want to watch that.
Nah, well, that's it. It would be too good.
Yes, it's too pure.
It would break
like
the star
soup.
Rating.
Pure than Ivory Soup, because that's only 99.44% pure. Anyway. So Shatter says that he's watching Brett's back, but no one needs to watch my back. Is he putting himself over Brett? I think he is.
So this is what I mean when I say, like, he thinks he's the biggest star here. He's talking all over Brett. And then I know, but in this universe, it's not the case. In this universe, he should be using that star power to go, "Hey, here's the guy here." But he's not. He's just like, "Hi, everybody." So
was Brett on Boston Legal? No.
No, he was doing Lonesome Dove.
Badly.
But it doesn't matter how he did it. He did it. Are you judging on what things badly they did? Let's talk about Tech War some more, shall we? Let's talk about Tech War.
Fair point.
Let's talk about that garbage. Sorry, so Shattens.
Between Tech War, Lonesome Dove, and Baywatch, 95 was not a good year for TV.
Oh, my gosh. No wonder everybody started doing LSD.
But then we get Baywatch Nights later in the year. You know about that, right?
Yeah, but we didn't get Lonesome Dove Nights, and I was sad.
Well, who cares? Baywatch Nights had Lou Rawls.
Which, his surname always sounds like the acronym for rolling on the floor laughing. Lou Rawls.
I will maintain that Baywatch Nights had the best TV theme song ever. At least top 5.
We used the, not the Baywatch Nights one. I'm intrigued to hear that now. But we used the out credit music for Baywatch in a Zoom quiz the other week.
You got to reach out, take hold of my hand?
That's the one. That's the one. Because we did a whole round where we played the end credit music of different shows.
Mm-hmm.
And people had to guess what the show was based on the end credits music as opposed to the title music.
I believe the song for Baywatch Nights is called After the Sun Goes Down.
But it's a great theme, and it's Hoff at his finest.
It's tremendous.
Hoff, who stood on the Berlin Wall singing Looking for Freedom, and that's what made the wall come down.
That's what happened. After the wall comes down.
I will run into the night.
Anyway, back to Shatner, who's a better singer than Hasselhoff, especially if you've ever heard Rocket Man.
Oh, damn right. And I'm an Elton John fan, and I was told as an Elton John fan, I should never listen to the Rocket Man version by our boy today, by Captain Kirk. And I was like, I want to hear it. And I heard it. Love it. It's like weird poetry.
Well, yeah, it's the that's one way to put it. There's that, and there's also the there's also Mr. Tambourine Man, which is at least slightly more coherent than Bob Dylan's version.
But you know what I love? You know what I love about Mr. Tambourine Man, and what I love about Rocket Man is not the fact that Shatner did it, but the fact that multiple people told Shatner it was a good idea to do it.
Hey, he made it his own.
He certainly did. Like, you will not you won't get his and Elton John's version of Rocket Man mixed up.
Oh no!
I see what you did there.
Shatner's 2004 album, I can't remember what the hell it was called, where he did like duets with some people in his Shatner style.
I'm looking at a William Shatner album list now.
2004.
William Shatner Seeking Major Tom.
And the front, really?
The front. There's one from called William Shatner Seeking Major Tom. And
that can't be it.
It features a front cover of Shatner photoshopped as an astronaut. They should have got John to do it. He'd have done a much better job. that's the front cover. And he does, oh my God, he does Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, look up William Shatner Seeking Major Tom as well, because that's where you'll find.
They finally put a bow on this segment.
No, let's do an album review of William Shatner.
If he tells Rhodey to stay out of he and Brett's way and calls Rhodey Roadkill, which must be where Heyman got the idea to name an Amish guy that.
Is this?
But Tom, after all that, great opening tag match, a surreal Shatner moment, green screen mayhem, all of that was but a mere prelude to this next match. The moment that Cultaholic fans have been coveting, for our patron saint has arrived. The man who once received a career retrospective on Cultaholic, and deservedly so. The man simply known as Mantar.
Mantar!
Half mandolin, half guitar.
That'd have been a far better gimmick! He's half musical instrument. So Mantar in the house. Do you want to hear some facts about Mantar? Not that you, nothing that you, there's nothing you don't already know, since we did a retrospective on him.
Well, I sure don't.
Mark Halleck. Meet Mike Halleck. Start again. Meet Mike Halleck, who debuted long before the idea of Mantar was shat out in wrestling back in 1991 under the far more palatable name of Bruiser Mastino. He spent 3 years in Catch Wrestling Association based in Germany, or Deutschland, if you live in Deutschland. During the time there, he legitimately pinned guys like Ulf Herrmann, who was a German legend, Dave Taylor, Fit Finlay, William Regal, and Lance Storm.
That's quite a resume.
It is a hell of a resume. He's done a few house shows for the WWF. Last summer, he had a couple of matches with Nikolai Volkov, which I'm sure were bangers.
I wish I could have seen these.
That was a house show match. Like, that was like, I presume that was the match where you all went to buy more food.
Well, yeah, because you see two 300-pound heavyweights and you think, I need more food.
And not just more like heavyweights, just like doughy heavyweights at this point.
Well, Nikolai's a legend, at least.
He is. He's also a doughy heavyweight.
Good point.
Mantar debuted on WWF Superstars, complete with Bull's Head. However, the decision by this point was made by higher-ups to drop said Bull's Head following the debut. There were many backstage who believed that the entire Mantar thing, complete with Jim Cornette as manager, was a rib.
Probably was.
It was a way of just sticking it to Jim Cornette just for fun.
I haven't read my notes. Corny's with him. Not by choice.
He didn't want to do it, did he, Jim?
Of course I don't want to be with this motherfucking guy with a bull's head for 400 pounds of a sack of shit. I don't want to manage this guy. No, they say, but being a professional I am, they sent me out there with him. I did what I could. I'm cheering for a guy who's kickstarting and snorting and doing all this bullshit. And go figure, his opponent wins more belts at WrestleMania than he does, and he's an enhancement talent. This motherfucking guy with horns on his head and a bodysuit makes him look like a chunky gladiator. So yes, it's Mantar versus Jason Arndt. So this is Mantar versus Jason Arndt, aka Joey Abs, of the Mean Street Posse fame. Well, fame, that's one way to put it.
And the first man to take a stunner.
That is true. So this man was Mantar's first Raw opponent. First man to take a stunner. Once beat Austin in a handicap match by pinning him in 96. Look it up.
He did.
And was part of the Mean Street Posse. This man has had, like, the most bizarre Forrest Gump career you can imagine in wrestling.
Amazing. It's an incredible time that he has had on the wrestling planet.
So Mantar moves a lot.
We like a good mooing wrestler.
I feel like we need a vignette to flesh his character out a little bit.
Yeah, it's like you think that you had Hakushi debut after weeks of like short videos and things like that. Nothing major, but at least a little bit of build. Whereas all we got was up next is Mantor, and then a picture of Mantor looking slightly off to the side. That's the only introduction we've had to Mantor on Monday Night Raw.
It's PN Moos.
Better gimmick.
It's the rapping cow. So we learned that Mantar has entered the Rumble. Good for us. We get to watch him on our watch along next week. He plows Abs into the corner. And again, because you see, he's a glorified farm animal. He plows into things while mooing. Belly to belly suplex. This goes on for a bit. Sean says even if he had number one, he could still go all the way. Because Sean's more interested in putting himself over than this match.
Yeah,
I can't blame him.
Interesting little tidbit there.
Don't spoil it. More plowing ensues, followed by an arbitrary standing splash to end it. And I like saying arbitrary standing splash because it's an acronym for ass.
I see what you did there. It was a very ass splash, wasn't it?
It was an ass splash. And
Dun.
Yeah, I got to say, just watching this match, Mantar had a little bit of potential, but there was still a little flash behind any of it.
It's like he was told. I can imagine he was told backstage, like, go out there and you can't moo enough.
Yeah. You have to get the point across that you're a half man, half beast. That you're you're part bovine on your father's side or something. I don't know. Which I don't know how that would work genetically, and I don't want to think about it. But it's like, I think of like Minotaur, like Antonio Nogueira from UFC, who at least doesn't act the gimmick, but is just, he's half man, but he's also half beast. And he's half beast when he knocks someone the hell out. You don't have to necessarily act out the bovine instincts of it. But this company, of course, broad humor and broad strokes and all that, and Mantar is what we got.
Yeah.
We go to the Royal Rumble report. Todd has his weird cheetah print necktie on, maybe like Chester Cheetah, I don't know.
He looks quite bulky today, do you not think?
Maybe he's Mantar, actually.
I wonder whether he might be.
He's just here to be our usual nuisance, although I gotta say, he wasn't bad in this segment, but we get a really weird moment here. Where we feel the need to use the Rumble Report to hype up an upcoming match on this show by having Todd throw it to Jeff Jarrett, who's in this arbitrary hallway. Jarrett calls Todd Eddie Munster, and he throws it back to Todd. All right, then.
Random.
Is
it that whole thing of where they're just trying to keep people interested in new and weird and wonderful ways? And it's that whole thing of they are desperate to make the show appear live. So I guess by having even like a little bit where they got somebody like on standby, it gives that vibe that it's very live.
That's probably the best way to describe it. We're just trying so hard to make it feel like it's anything but warmed over leftovers.
That's what they're trying to do, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it doesn't do anything. It's just Jeff Jarrett calling Todd Eddie Munster and throwing it back to him. That's not the most exciting thing in the world. So back to Todd. He says, on pay-per-view, WWF is the originator, not the imitator. Ooh, somebody saw the buy rate for Bash at the Beach and Halloween Havoc and wasn't happy.
I thought that might have been a little elbow to the ribs of what took place at the Bash.
Or just any show where WWE is starting to move ahead of WWF a little bit. Hogan moves numbers. Say what you will about him.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep hitting the Pamela Anderson plug here because she's the biggest. This is the second straight week where they have not named any of the Rumble entrants. It's just, hey, Pam's going to be there to escort the winner of WrestleMania. They're now, they have stopped advertising the participants in the hopes that you will buy the show because they can't say, hey, Stephen Dunn's going to be in it. Mantar's going to be in it.
It like, says so oh, much hell. About the lack of star power where all the focus, where like the focus has been on the person who will be there to be the prize for the winner, essentially. You win their arm for an evening. And also the fact they've shortened the match as well. Like, that says everything about where they sit, like, star power-wise right now.
I think you and Matthew need to have a drinking game during the match where you, every time someone lasts less than 1 minute, you take a gulp.
Oh, mate, we are getting smashed next week.
It goes to absurd levels, let's just put it that way. So, Todd has the balls to say that Taker versus IRS could be bigger than WrestleMania. He said this.
And he didn't even blink. I thought he might have blinked for help.
And you wonder why he had a job for 5 years. It's for this reason. So, Bearer and Taker then cut a promo in front of the Rumble Beach backdrop. Which, talk about a clash. Usually when Taker had a promo, it would be in front of his purple and black tinted Undertaker backdrop just to create the ambiance and the mood. Now he's a clam digger.
It's just a funny phrase.
Poor Taker. They gave him so much crap to work with.
He was just that guy they could just put in places and he would, like, help lift somebody up in theory.
Well, I mean, he was covered in Teflon because he always came out of it as the Undertaker, no matter what. But yeah. It's just the stuff he was put in was just usually so bad. It wasn't his fault. So we have Kid and Holly versus Bigelow Tatanka, tag title tournament final. Diesel versus Brett for the world title. Razor Jarrett IC title. In theory, this is not a bad looking show.
No, it's not, and that's the thing. Like, so far, 95 hasn't been too nasty to us.
It's January.
It's true, but I was I was so ready for it just to be crap from the off, and we're 2 weeks in, and I feel all right.
I'm sure
I feel different after the Rumble.
Jarrett takes exception to a question of Todd thinking that perhaps his Rumble title match could be at risk by facing Brett here, and. Jarrett's like, of course not, because you know, I'm the greatest entertainer. Ha ha ha, I'm Jeff Jarrett. So as Jarrett and Rhodey walk off, we hear Todd still talking. And Todd talks about how he's going to bet on Brett, and then he turns and takes exception to that.
I'm curious as to how they can hear what Todd's saying.
I don't know, maybe it's like when Randy Newman narrates your life, Family Guy. Now Jarrett's gonna walk through the backstage area. Left foot, right foot. His glasses look stupid. One of those deals.
It reminded me of Will Ferrell in Stranger Than Fiction.
that's even better.
I was hoping that Todd Pettigrew will go all over Thompson and go, what Jeff Jarrett didn't know was he was about to die today. And Jarrett turns around like, what?
What Jeff Jarrett didn't know is that no matter how many world titles he put on himself in his own company, no one was going to watch.
What? You'll never draw a dime.
he thought pinning Monty Brown was the right idea for business, but he was very wrong.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Bret Hart versus Jeff Jarrett.
Here we go.
This was a very interesting match. And not now, I know, Jen, I know what you're thinking. The Shatner parts, which, okay, they were entertaining. But there's more to it than that here that I want to point out. So we start the match. Shatner looks at Bret and makes the throat slash gesture. Jesus, Shatner's a violent man. Like Shatner's like the girlfriend and the water boy holding the sign. Do you want me to kill him? So Brick gives his shades to his kid in a leather jacket, and Vince cannot shoehorn in. That's what the WF is all about, right there.
He loves it.
The idea that some kid is happy being at a wrestling show is it's had more force than it would have been in 1988.
But it's that thing of every time Vince gets the chance, he'll just scream from the rooftops about how big the company feels every chance he gets.
Uh-huh. Shatner yells to Bret, throw him out of the ring, come on, which Bill Watts would not approve of.
No, that would have been in a DQ.
Well, was over the top rope, especially. Now, here's where the match was interesting to me. We see Bret showing a maniacal heel edge, raking Jarrett's eyes across the top rope. He's just in a violent and not so sportsmanlike mood this week. And I know why. Mm-hmm. Based on his memoirs, Vince was afraid, this is Bret's memoirs, Vince was afraid that the fans were going to boo Diesel at the Rumble because Bret's such a big baby face. So Bret intentionally started working a bit heelish to create the heat so that Diesel could actually build sympathy against a smaller opponent. So Bret's using this match to kind of work out some of the heel kinks.
So that's why there is that edge to it.
Yes, that's why Bret is doing this.
Ah.
They're using part of it as Bret's still wound up from what happened at Survivor Series because Owen screwed him over, manipulated his parents, their parents. And Bret's still full of piss and vinegar and wants to hurt everybody, so he's taking his aggression out on Jarrett this week. And when we get to the Rumble, he'll still have that chip on his shoulder as he tries to bring Diesel down. And he'll resort to some overtly aggressive tactics to make sure that Diesel is the babyface in the match, de facto.
Well, that's very Bret Hart, isn't it? Bret Hart was always very giving like that.
Oh, absolutely. Bret has never been selfish in the ring, except for that one time when, according to Diesel, when he won't go for the powerbomb a year later. And that led to Diesel leaving the company, but, you know, that's whatever. Allegedly.
He just didn't want to go up for the powerbomb.
Well, because Bret felt he looked weak at the 96 Rumble and didn't want to look weak two shows in a row because he was the defending world champion come WrestleMania, so he was trying to find a compromise, and it was very hard. They were kind of painted into a corner, and Diesel got upset.
I wasn't aware that there was that little issue. I guess we'll talk about that next year when we get closer.
I shall remember. So Bret's showing his heel's edge. Vince says Shatner's only there to keep Rhodey in check. And the plug tag war, we can't forget tag war. So Brett is dominating this match. He's working the arm. Jarrett tries to slam him. Brett holds onto the arm bar, spins him over into it. It's a really good match so far. A lot of moves. We get some Jeff Jarrett ass on a sunset flip attempt. And Brett starts going into the moves of doom, but Jarrett reaches the eyes and blocked a sharpshooter. We get the painful-looking spot where Brett does like a crossbody attempt. Jarrett moves away, and Brett kind of flies crotch first into the ropes. That's painful to watch. Jarrett gets the figure four. And Brett's struggling to get to the ropes. William Shatner pushes the rope in so Brett can grab it.
Yay! Shatner already being an ass.
And Brett would have lost if not for William Shatner.
Let's all remember that Brett would have fallen to the mighty Jeff Jarrett had the star and writer of Tech War not been present.
Well, Shatner's the WF company man. He can't go to AEW because the boss's last name.
Oh, yes.
AEW has signed Miro.
Although, now you said that, I now want to see William Shatner doing a bit in AEW. Just so we could get Shatner in the ring as Tony Khan comes out and just goes, Khan!
Does that mean Shatner can be... Does that mean John Silver can be Spock?
I don't see why not.
Well, yeah, I mean, just have Brayley abuse him some more for having pointy ears.
There you go. I'm down with that. I'm down with that.
Shatner versus Khan. We could do this, I think.
I think we should.
So after Shatner saves Brett's ass, Jarrett gets the reverse cradle. Brett counters to win. It was a very good match for what it was. A very good match. I mean, it's Brett and Jarrett. I mean, how could it suck? But that's not why we're here, Tom. We're here for the post-match.
We flipping well are. And you know what? Oh, describe it. We'll talk about it after.
Okay, so from my notes here, Rhodey gets into the ring. Shatner's in the ring also. Shatner nails the Rhodey with a forearm smash. I think, but only like in the academic sense.
That was basically an embryonic Superman punch. Let's call it what it is.
The stupid man punch.
Stupid man punch.
Oh, I'm so proud of that one. So then Rhodey is not happy about being love tapped there. So he goes to the top rope and throws a flying nothing at nothing as Shatner just sidesteps as though he's Samoa Joe. See, Samoa Joe stole the nope from Shatner.
Oh, so Roman got the Superman punch from Shatner. Joe stole the nope.
Yes. So then Shatter picks Rhodey up by the... He didn't really have dreads yet, did he? I don't think he did. He just grabbed him by the back of the head. And starts kind of smashing his head into the buckle. But the timing is so off, like he's singing. So it's basically just Brian James smashing his own face in the turnbuckle ball. Shatner kind of jerks his arm back and forth in an attempt to find the synchronicity with James's head.
It was a bit like Shatner was buffering.
As Rhodey needed buffering for hurting his own head.
It's a bit like one of those confrontations that you might have, like playing Fortnite online, where but somebody has got a slower internet connection than you.
It was like a frozen FaceTime.
I think a wrestling match over Zoom would have had a little bit better synchronicity than this moment.
Probably. So the coup de grace or the coup disgrace.
He did a coup de grace? Whoa! Finn Shatner!
Picture Demon Shatner. He's covered in body paint and says, watch Tech War.
John,
Yes, but we want Demon Shatner.
Dum con dun 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 con
So
Shatner with a coup de grace, what a dream.
Well, that's not, unfortunately that's not how it ended, because that would have been amazing. That was Shatner's mega move on the Raw video game. But anyway, Shatner has to throw Rhodey over the top rope to kind of bring this thing to an end. Now, usually you would just grab the guy by the back of the head, as Shatner just had Rhodey moments ago, and run him to the ropes, and the guy takes his own bump, usually. No, Shatner holds Rhodey by the arm, as if he's showing him a trick somehow, or helping him stretch his arm, shambles toward the ropes, and Rhodey has to kind of throw himself over the ropes while Shatner was holding his elbow. It was weird looking.
Yeah, that was, a bit out of sync between these two.
Very dodgy, as your sort would say.
Yes, dodgy is the way.
And that is the end of William Shatner's involvement with WWF until 15 years later when he sings some theme songs for everybody, including Rey Mysterio's.
Oh, God, he did, didn't he?
Booyaka, booyaka.
619. No, he didn't say 619, sadly.
That'd have been funny.
That'd have been amazing if he did. You know what? Okay, we've ragged on Shatner quite a bit for that. I quite enjoyed it. And in a weird, perverted way, I quite enjoyed it. I thought Shatner was funny. He didn't hold back with what he was doing. He seemed to throw himself into it for good or for better or for worse. He certainly threw himself into it.
As far as celebrity involvement goes, I've seen better, but I've seen way worse.
Yes.
And we've seen enough, unfortunately, we've seen enough Raw guest host episodes where a celebrity can't be asked to even care. Shatner may not have cared about wrestling. I don't know if he did or not. He might not have, but he was a professional. He came off as someone who embraced what he was doing. And even though he wasn't perfect at it by any means, we saw some flubs in there. He still tried.
He gave it his all.
He didn't look ashamed to be there. He didn't look like he'd rather be anywhere else in the world. He looked like he was happy to be there. He was a professional, and that's all you can really ask if you're going to involve a celebrity. Maybe you get lucky and you get someone like Stephen Amell, who's a big fan, or Pat McAfee, or even someone like Lawrence Taylor, who we'll see very soon has the athletic aptitude for it. But, I mean, those are rare. Shatner, no athlete by any means, especially at this point, this stage of his life. But he did his best. And that's all you could ask for.
Exactly.
We get the rare Diesel Slim Jim ad. Get used to it, because it ain't going to last long.
Well, that was it. I'm surprised. I don't even remember it. It just shows how long it actually lasted. I enjoyed his Savage impression in the sign-off for the video. It very much felt like he was channeling Savage. He was lifting weights, and at one point he has to hold the weight with one arm because he's strong and reach across and get a Slim Jim. But here's the thing. Kevin Nash is a human being. He lifts up the weight with one arm, and then just before the camera cuts away, you can see the weight coming down on the one side. And I got the impression the moment that cut was just the weights hit the ground. But we caught it just before they did.
It's kind of a microcosm for how things are at this point. Not quite what it once was.
But gosh, they're trying to make it look so.
Yeah, they're doing all they can, but it's, you see the strings and you see the holes. We get tag title tournament footage. We see Bigelow Tatanka beating the Head Shrinkers. the best part of this footage, it's Bigelow Tatanka versus the new Head Shrinkers of Fatu and Sione. The Shrinkers are about to win this match when Tatanka starts beating up Afa on the outside. And when I say beating up Afa, I mean he's striking him from behind while Afa just stands there and looks mildly annoyed. Like, Afa barely registered to anything larger than a herd of gnats is biting his back.
Was that just him just like, I just can't be bothered to play along today? Or was that just him at full speed thinking he was playing along today?
I don't know, but it made me laugh.
It was funny.
I think that was the real highlight of this show. Something that happened on Saturday. So that's about creates a distraction finishing the Tonka Pensioni. I'm sorry, was it Bam Bam? I can't remember now because it's been a while since I've seen the show.
I'm sure Tatanka pinned the Oni.
It was. So I'm guessing Bam Bam must have been the one who was hitting Afa with something that Afa barely registered. Meanwhile, we see the match for Kid and Holly beat the Bodies originally. It'd have been good to see this before the opening match, I think. Yes, instead of playing it later in the show, where Kid pins Pritchard after a reverse cradle. It was a double reverse cradle spot where first Pritchard was on top, then Kid ended up on top, and Kid wins the match. Him and Holly go to the finals, as we've already established. Speaking of Bigelow and Tatanka, we have the entire Million Dollar Corporation on King's Court, and what a group it is.
Oh, what a killer's row. Isn't it funny, right? Of all the things that are still happening on Raw, all these years later, you would never have called King's Court to be the thing. Because we had a brand new King's Court on Raw this past week. And I saw this one, I thought, how, that's ridiculous.
And here, instead of the Hurt Business, we have the Hurt and 'Cause We're Almost Out of Business.
The Hurt Crap Business. The Bad Business.
It's not an impressive stable at all. Plus, it's a group plus two druids, which for all we know are like Patterson and Briscoe.
I'd hope so.
So DiBiase's putting his corporation's chances over in all their matches at the Rumble. He talks about the IRS Taker match. He gets off the good line. Do you think dead that like or dead presidents?
I wrote that line down. That's a great line.
And I mean, that's definitely a DiBiase appropriate line. So he puts over IRS's chances versus Taker. Spoiler, it didn't go so well. We go to the tag title tournament final. Lawler calls him Hit the Wall Holly and 911 Kid, which are kind of funny names, I'm not going to lie.
They are good funny names.
This is when Lawler was on his game. And then we get this random mention that the winners of the tournament, whoever they may be, will face the Smoking Guns next week on Raw, because the Guns had to pull out of the tournament because of the alleged vertigo injury to one of them.
I remember them pulling out of the tournament. So I guess in storyline land, it makes sense to give them a shot if they were unable to be in the tournament.
I mean, it does, but it seems weird that DiBiase is the one making the announcement here.
Yeah, that's strange. But then you could argue that because they're like, because the idea is that they're in the know and they're on the inside, and they pay people off left, right, and center. Ted DiBiase could have just gone, "Well, I found some information. I paid one of my my insiders, my sources, and they told me this was what was happening."
You know who DiBiase's source is?
Is it Sean Ross Sapp?
It's pretty obvious.
Oh.
I think that based on, you know, the local advertising's already said it's going to be the Guns versus Kid and Holly. I mean, that's already well known because, you know, they're flying Lawrence Taylor into Tampa, and that's where they're going to do the angle with Bigelow and Taylor. They're actually going with this for WrestleMania. Can you believe it? I mean, it's not like when they brought Ali down to the Mid-South in order to you remember Brian when they had him on that he punched Jake Roberts and I mean it didn't lead to anything, which is why Jake no sold it, because he said I have to be here next week and he doesn't. I mean, it's kind of like that. I mean, I don't know why you would sacrifice Bickle like that. Sir, this is a Wendy's.
That's fine, Mister. That's all well and good, Mister Meltzer. But what pizza do you want? Oh, Dave, you wacky boy!
Sorry, we're about to use in the box as Meltzer speeds off.
Top marks to Meltzer, who yesterday talked for 15 minutes about why Harold Mage was sacked from New Japan. Only at the end of it for us to realise, actually, you don't know. But you talked for 15 minutes about something. He's like a snake charmer.
Was it you doing the news and then and you were listening to taking notes and then you, you realized you'd been had?
I think that might have been what it was.
Why does Tom listen to Meltzer? Like, oh, okay.
That's why. I keep getting drawn in. It's them eyes. He's like, they're eerie.
It's those damn eyes. That damn smile.
That's a good meme.
So.
I want Dave Meltzer to do a Twitch stream where he just does an inventory of all the tins in his cupboard. Is that too much to ask?
How about him playing Pong while he tells us about the significance of but then they brought Leon Spinks to FMW and how it indirectly inspired the Evolution pay-per-view.
I want a Twitch stream with Dave Meltzer describing the backstage politics of World Class Championship Wrestling through the late 70s whilst playing Manic Miner.
Well, the thing is, Fritz had all these kids and...
I want Meltzer to describing everyone that Vern Gagne trained whilst playing Fantastic Dizzy on the Genesis.
I mean... And of course, you have Ken Patera as part of that group, Rick Steamboat.
Pick up the axe, Dave.
I'm talking.
I know, but you're missing. You've got to get the axe to knock the wall down, otherwise Dizzy gets stuck.
No, Axe was mass superstar, and Vern didn't train him.
Dave, will you concentrate on the game, man?
Well, it's not all about the game, is it? Ironically, wait, is it all about the game? No, it's... Is, well, you know? No, it's actually... No, it's not. It's not. I wouldn't.
Forget so this. I'm gonna go to the other Twitch channel and watch Brian Alvarez sort his dishwasher out and cry.
Minus five loads.
I stacked it all badly. Now I have minus five plates.
So, back to this informative segment.
What journalists will do on Twitch instead.
DiBiase calls Bundy the odds on favorite to win the Rumble because he's big, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Bundy's the hot pick for Million Dollar Corporation. I was expecting Ted to have a little bit of a meltdown because he's like, oh, what a great night the Rumble's going to be. IRS is going to beat The Undertaker. Bigelow and Tatanka are fighting. Bundy's in the room. Whoa, what a mess. Look at the state of this. I'm meant to be a businessman, and this is the best I've bought.
It's like when you play Madden and you're like 85 million or for the salary cap, and you realize you have like 25 roster spots to fill.
You just pad in.
You just hit reset and start a new game. But it's real life, so you can't.
He is the equivalent of when I used to play FIFA Road to World Cup 98. And the one time I did a season mode and I couldn't afford Ronaldo as he was too expensive and I didn't have the budget. So I bought a player called Redondo because he sounded similar and he was like 30 grand cheaper.
You're saying you went to the 33 cent store and got some ranch cola?
Basically, that's what I did. Thinking it would, and then being annoyed that he was a crap player. I don't understand. He should be good.
Are you saying Redondo was the Corporal Kirshner of the Ronaldo Sergeant Slaughter?
Redondo was the everybody of the Million Dollar Corporation.
The CV Alfie to his Jimmy Snuka.
Oh, nice. That's a lovely, that is a kind of niche reference that you'll only get on this podcast. There are many others that will imitate, but none will ever duplicate.
Especially CV Affy.
No.
We go to our alleged main event of Mabel versus Lee Tobin.
Alleged main event.
As we get some Kevin Dunn cam in and out, in and out, in and out.
Oh, it's even worse at the end.
Oh, yeah, this thing was just like seizure inducing.
If you complain about Kevin Dunn in 2020, watch this match and see the cuts back and forth with Mabel's entrance. Like, literally every half a nanosecond cut to a different camera.
Oh, yeah. It's trying to create this rap video atmosphere, but they have no idea what the hell they're doing.
They really don't.
As Vince dates this show further by mentioning MTV Rockin' Jock. Which actually made me happy to hear it, because I'd forgotten all about that.
What was MTV Rockin' Jock?
They were sporting events that featured, like, you know, artists, celebrities, athletes. There was, like, a baseball game, basketball game, but, like the rules were, like, modified to make it, like, more sporting for everyone. They were just, like, charity events, really.
Right, with you.
And Diesel got involved with that, so they were trying to say, like, hey, he's mainstream, because he's here with Jon Stewart, who had a talk show back then, and the pre-Daily Show. Like, we're hearing Jon Stewart get mentioned on Raw in 95.
No, he'd be on the show many years later.
Yeah, he hadn't even taken his final form yet.
Oh.
This was just humble talk show host Jon Stewart. This is pre-Daily Show period, before Craig Kilborn even became the first host.
Oh, man. That really dates it.
Oh, yeah. So Vince drowns out Oscar's rap with a bunch of that media stuff for Diesel, because Oscar's not important, apparently. And in 2 months, he really wouldn't be. I will say, Tobin has a great perma-fro. That is a magnificent 1995 hairstyle. I mean, granted, it was 10 years out of date even then, but it's fantastic. So Mabel shows off his wares during this match. Big suplex. Gets that awesome spinning heel kick that he does. He gets a leaping clothesline at one point. And what I mean by that is, it looks like he got enough height where it appeared like he was, like, Toba's going to rock bottom him, but Mabel just came down on top of him.
Yeah, I wasn't sure he was taking that move there.
it was like Toba's going for the downward spiral or the flatliner or whatever. But, well, he got flattened either way. And Mabel finishes with a big leg drop, because somebody in this company has to use that since they're getting a main event push.
Exactly.
And then we get a post-match interview with Mabel. As Mabel talks about his chances of winning the Rumble, Sean takes exception to him thinking he's going to win. Out comes Bundy to argue. Bundy and Mabel are face-to-face with Sean in between him, and Sean looks very irked.
I quite like Mabel's promo here. I thought it was fiery and simple.
Yeah, Mabel was not a bad promo at all. Like, he wasn't great, but he wasn't terrible. And Mabel wants to fight right now, gets in the ring. Bundy's in no hurry because he's a cowardly heel, even though he's a monster. I thought the best part was just Sean sandwiched between them while making, like, annoyed faces. Like, all right, guys, can one of you back up so I can get the hell out of here?
Yeah, he was caught between two lovers there, and I think that he wanted to be far away from that void as possible.
In between a rock and a hard place, as they say. So we get our last ditch pitch for the Rumble. And this is the commercial we get. We see Diesel on a beach. He's playing one arm tug of war with, like, a bunch of guys.
That's not a euphemism.
Pam walks by looking beautiful as usual.
Then we all had a one arm tug of war.
So Diesel. Diesel smiles at her as he thoroughly beats the opposition.
Thank God you said opposition.
Are you going to survive this segment?
No! So Diesel walks in next.
So after Diesel gives a good tug and succeeds,
and looks far happier for it.
So Pam keeps walking down the beach, and we see, for some reason, Lex Luger spotting for Adam Bomb on a weight bench.
Again, not you.
So Luger is so smitten with Pam walking by that he lets the bar drop across Bomb's chest. Apparently Bomb is killed.
Oh, Bomb is dead. Bomb did not survive.
No. Oh.
Pam keeps on walking. Here come the Bushwhackers. Not a euphemism. as they march into a volleyball net.
Not a euphemism.
Because I'm so distracted by Pam's beauty, you see.
I get it. I get that all the time when I see a beautiful woman. I always walk into volleyball nets.
Yeah. Even when you're like in places that aren't ever volleyball.
Yeah,
like
I was at a bus stop.
Streets and, and art galleries and, I don't know, the unemployment office.
Volleyball shops.
Well, no, they don't have volleyball nets at volleyball shops.
Exactly. I was backing up your opinion.
And we see Sean being fallen over by a bunch of girls, or actually a couple girls. He sees Pam, and he leaves his two women behind because Pam is Pam.
Mm-hmm.
So now everyone is fawning over Pam because she's the star of the show, not them. You see the problem here, Tom.
I certainly do. Pam, if I was coming into wrestling cold, I would have assumed that Pamela Anderson is about to win the Royal Rumble.
She's Beyonce and they're the backup dancers.
Yeah, exactly. This is like the Shatner thing at the beginning, though. How, like, Shatner came... Shatner's like, well, I'm the star here, and the wrestlers are all the second fiddles. Like, if it was Bret Hart appearing on Tech War, then yeah. But it's not. It's these guys being in the WWF playground, and it immediately shrinks them.
Mm. Although in the end, we see who the stars really are. As Luke and Butch march off with her, I'm sure she was thrilled to do that part.
I'm sure that was the highlight for her.
Oh, this is the highlight for 95 right here. So that is your last-ditch plug for the Rumble, is Pam being accosted by all these wrestlers who think she's the hottest thing walking, and the Bushwhackers abscond with her. I can't wait to get this show.
Oh, it's going to be a thing.
So next week, the Smoking Guns will face the new champions, whoever they may be. The Rumble winner will also be appearing. So Dick Murdoch will be on next week, thank God.
Yes!
So then the sign-off bug appears on the screen with a minute 30 left in the show. I'm like, wait, what's... There's like a Tech War trailer coming on after this. I didn't know what it was going to be. And then I realized it's a Diesel video. Just to hype him up even more. As we get the alternate version of his Roseanne theme for background music. It just reeks of filler as we see Diesel highlights and putting him over strong because apparently his promotional push so far has not been very powerful.
It's weird because I feel like they've pushed him quite a bit, but I guess, you know, they're just going to keep driving it.
And it's not taking, it seems, so far. Maybe perhaps some of the house show numbers have not been strong. And they're getting a little bit of a bit skittish about how effective or ineffective Diesel has been to this point.
Well, they won't change their mind completely because we are at the beginning of a very long run with Diesel as the man.
Yeah, they're determined to make him the new Hogan. And what are you eating?
Nothing. I'm just unscrewing a pen lid. My apologies.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're eating a carrot stick. which if you are, great. Carrots are good. Yeah, it's just a full minute and a half video of harmonicas. It reminds you of the Connors sitting around the dinner table.
It's great music.
And that's it. That is your go home for the Rumble.
Wow.
That is where we're at.
Well, I'm ready for the Rumble. I'm here to Rumble! Royal Rumble 1995 is next in our sights. It'll be myself, it'll be Justin Henry, and it'll be Matthew Gregg getting together from the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review, where we are going to watch the Royal Rumble in its entirety. That is right. We are coming thick and fast with watch-alongs here on the Classic Review podcast. So we have another one next. Oh, mate, I think this might be the first time in my life I have watched the entire Royal Rumble 95 pay-per-view all the way through.
Well, I will say this much, and we'll see if I'm proven wrong in a week's time. I actually like this show a lot.
Okay.
This show might be the biggest overachiever in WWE history in terms of I was not interested in it. The hype has been awful. It's a crappy roster, but they pulled it off.
perhaps Mania 31, given the awful hype for that show, Sting, Hunter, Lesnar, Reigns, all that stuff, and then they just turn people off and end up being a great show. Maybe that's the biggest overachiever ever in terms of ratio of hype to output. This has to be up there, though. It's near that level of disparity, I would say.
Well, we will all find out together with a classic watch along. This time next week on the Cultaholic podcast feed, you don't have to do anything differently. You just download it as you normally would, and we will see you for next week. And until we get to next week, he is at JRH Writing. I am at Tom Campbell. Together, we are at Cultaholic. Don't forget to join us. Oh my God, I forgot William Shatner did a cover of Cult Common People by Pulp. I forgot that was a thing. I forgot that was a thing as well. What a day. What a day.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.